Hi, this is Mike Hunicky. Welcome to yet another episode of Red Flags Rising. I'm the co-chair of Huseford & Reed's Sanctions, Export Controls, and AML Practice Group. With me, as always, is my good friend Brent Carlson, a director at Berkeley Research Group. Brent, how are you doing today?
Excellent. Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here as always.
To put a date and timestamp on this podcast, just in case things change as we are recording it, because we are going to dive into the topic of tariffs, it is Wednesday, April 23rd, just around 4:30 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time. So, Brent, as we wade into tariffs, how are we going to approach the topic today?
Well, Mike, we've talked a lot about export controls and how the white-collar mindset is coming into the export control world. In the tariff world, it's the same thing. This is all being driven by the America First trade policy, which puts a priority on tariffs as well as export controls in terms of national and economic security priorities. So we're going to talk about how we're seeing the convergence between trade compliance and the white-collar world and how that's going to be playing out in the tariff world.
You know, Brent, the news is all over the place. I think just a few hours before recording, we saw a significant update in the potential decrease in the tariffs on China. How are we supposed to chart a steady course through these rough seas?
The good news is that despite the chaos, clarity may be found by discerning the signals through all the noise. The world is being whipsawed by tariffs. Uncertainty reigns and chaos abounds. Tariffs are on, tariffs are off, tariffs are delayed. Tariffs are back. No one really knows exactly where these are going to go. This makes business planning extremely difficult, if not impossible, to say the least. And that's my Captain Obvious statement of the day.
Thank you, Brent.
Anyway, nevertheless, if one takes a step back and look at what are the larger megatrends that are driving the entire situation, you can see what are the signals through the noise, and that can help in the business planning and strategy process.
One of the things we also try to help people analyze accurately is what is the risk that you need to manage against? As a corporate compliance officer, you need to be thinking about what are the potential fines and penalties that we might face? The vast deltas between some of the different tariff rates for different countries or for different purposes are going to create huge incentives for smuggling or bad ideas.
I think that's a good way to think about it. We're looking at that convergence of tariffs, trade compliance, and the white-collar world. It's important to keep in mind, where's that gray rhino coming from? That big major issue that's coming our way that may not be fully recognized within the organization. In terms of discerning that signal from the noise, one thing is just understand that the world has changed. Increased tariffs are here to stay in some way, shape, or form. The international trade world that we knew over the past three decades, and even going back to the Bretton Woods Accords at the end of World War II, is gone, and it's being replaced by something else. What will this new order look like? It's not going to go back to the status quo ante where you had a movement towards as free a trade as possible, because trade is now intertwined with geopolitical considerations.
For a long time, the U.S. viewed how to make international economic policy in a way that best served U.S. national security policy was to promote free trade. If you look back, for example, at 1997, then Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers said that the United States' economic policy should and will be based on the idea that promoting integration and prosperity around the world is enormously in our national interest because of the stability it brings in a world that is still a dangerous place. As of now, integration like that is seen not as a source of stability or strength, but as a vulnerability, as a weakness. Economic security, the idea that the government should more assertively intervene in the world economy to improve resilience and address national security risks, has emerged as perhaps the central objective of U.S. international economic policy. This was what was recently written by Jeffrey Gertz and Emily Kilcrease, both from the Center for New American Security, in a recent Foreign Affairs magazine article. This is a kaleidoscopic turn of the impossible trinity of economic interdependence, economic security, and geopolitical competition, any two of which can coexist at the same time, but not all three. It was also described in a great book by a longtime U.S. foreign policy official named Edward Fishman called Choke Points, American Power in the Age of Economic Warfare, came out just this year. So as we see economic security falling today, with competition rising, interdependence is what has to go, if you take that trinity concept here. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
It's important to also take a look at some historical background behind that and what led to the situation that we're at today. It's another indicator where we're not going to go back to status quo ante. China is really the 800-pound gorilla in all this. Basically, it was the last major Asian economy to develop based on that export-led model of development. This came from the end of World War II. The United States was looking to help Japan rebuild, and then Japan, then later South Korea and Taiwan, rebuild their post-war economies. And so the United States opened its markets to exports from those countries. That was, as you described, that was seen as a fundamental national security issue then for the United States to create stability within the world. China then was the last major country to take advantage of that policy. There was the hope that as China entered its reform era in the 1980s, that accelerated into the 1990s, that culminated in China entering the World Trade Organization in 2001, that with China's economic development and liberalization, political liberalization would follow. Unfortunately, political liberalization in China stalled. On the economic side, China's economic growth has only accentuated the structural imbalances in its economy. China produces far more than its domestic economy can absorb. China produces about 30% of the world's goods, but its domestic market can only consume about half that. So Chinese products have nowhere to go but out for export. China is basically exporting the structural imbalances of its economy. It's important for the government, for social and political stability reasons in China, to maintain growth. So the economy is on a treadmill. It can't get off. There's a saying in Chinese too, it's a qihu nan xia. It's when you're riding the tiger, it's hard to get off. They're on this path where they have to keep developing this growth, keep developing this capacity, but these goods have nowhere to go. It's not just going to be the United States that's raising tariffs, but other countries as well. They're going to have to decide what domestic industries to protect to avoid a flood of cheap imports from China.
Brent, what you're getting at here, coming back to one of the challenges anyone working at a multinational company is facing right now, what line do you take? How do you chart a course through all this? Ignore all the dips and dodges that might be happening as to the specific tariff rates that are announced. There is a chance that these imbalances, these meta factors in the Chinese economy are just going to ultimately overwhelm even a seemingly good deal that's reached. This issue is going to keep coming up. You're going to have huge pressure, like water flowing downhill, to find another route. That's what the trade compliance people dealing with this will have to be really attuned to.
That's right. China is going to be an outlier in terms of U.S. tariffs, no matter where those rates are going to settle. This pressure leads us into that convergence with the white-collar compliance and enforcement world. Because according to the classic fraud triangle, the three elements for fraud are pressure, opportunity, and rationalization. And everything starts with pressure. In the face of great pressure or incentives, things are going to be attempted. And when we're looking at the tariff world, these are tariff evasion schemes. Why don't we unpack that a little bit?
Britt, that risk is already well developed and present. This is not an area of enforcement where people at the DOJ would have to learn a new skill. The DOJ has been very active in the False Claims Act space. The False Claims Act also allows private whistleblowers to bring their own cases. They can pursue these cases and receive a bounty of 15 to 25% of whatever recovery the government gets. The government's been bringing these cases already for many years regarding customs duties evasion. For different types of pressure points, what's the country of origin? What is the item? What value is the item? What's the invoice say? Is that the real invoice? Has there been a substantial transformation of the item in a particular country that would then allow the importer to point to that country where that transformation occurred as the country of origin instead of what might be an original country for some or many of the inputs? All of these things have already been the basis for significant False Claims Act prosecutions by the DOJ. We already have signals of where this administration's DOJ is going to go with the False Claims Act, and they made a point of calling out specifically enforcement to recover illegally avoided customs duties. Back in February, on February 20th of this year, the Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the DOJ Civil Division's Criminal Litigation Branch, Michael Granston, said that the False Claims Act is a powerful tool for fighting against efforts to avoid paying customs duties on imported goods, and enforcement against illegal foreign trade practices will be a focus for the department amid President Donald Trump's recent introduction of sweeping tariffs. So wherever the tariffs sweep, as far as the percentage back and forth, here you have an appointee in the new administration asserting that this is going to be a key area of focus.
You also see tailwinds coming out of Congress as well. There was a recent announcement by the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party that recognized these evasion schemes with PRC companies trying to shift products through other third countries claiming that these were not PRC products. At the government level in the United States, they're highly attuned to this, and there's a lot of pressure to ramp up enforcement very quickly.
The administration is not going to want to be embarrassed by media reports that indicate that the administration is losing millions of dollars in revenue because companies are being allowed to get away with these various schemes to reduce the customs duties improperly. So fully expect the DOJ to be empowered by the administration to look for violations of these laws and look for underreporting of customs value, for example, or customs duties, and go after it. You can have whistleblowers called key TAM relators in the parlance of the law, which dates back to the Civil War and an effort by the U.S. to reduce government procurement fraud on the union side there. But that's 15-25% of the government recovery would go to whistleblowers.
I have a question regarding leveraging the False Claims Act for tariff enforcement. Now, we talk about whistleblowers. The traditional notion of a whistleblower is somebody internally. What about also the possibility that companies could face whistleblowers through False Claims Act actions from their competitors?
It can be a competitor. The False Claims Act doesn't restrict who can be a whistleblower. Brent, one thing that we've hit on in prior podcasts and in prior blog posts that we've written is the value and the importance of assessing your risk by looking dynamically at how things have changed over time. It's exactly the same here. If you are a company that's been importing into the U.S. for any period of time, Customs is going to look at the track record of what dutiable value had you been declaring for those same items or components. If you change it because now there are tariffs and some products coming from China, you should expect them to ask you, on what basis are you changing it? It does not mean that it's illegal to ever change the dutiable value of what you're bringing into the United States. It's important to keep in mind that there are different tests that the Customs and Border Protection folks will accept, and that they will expect you to defend what you declare. You should fully expect that if there's any significant change between what you're doing in December of 2024 and what you're doing today, you will at some point or another be asked about it. Changes in where you say things were substantially transformed, where you say they're coming from, what you say they are, will be probed.
I like your comment on change and looking how things are changing. That's another important thing that we deal with, where people may be dealing with assumptions that were operational in the past, but they're just obsolete today. We've seen it in the export controls world. How is that going to be applied in the tariffs and False Claims Act world? And these are two areas, penalties and knowledge. Let's unpack penalties a little bit, because at the end of the day, if the government wants to get serious about enforcement, they're not going to be handing out parking and speeding tickets.
Absolutely, Brent. And just like export controls and sanctions in the world of tariffs, there's multiple layers of potential fines, penalties, and other consequences you could face. Starting with the Customs and Border Protection Service, they are empowered under certain circumstances to impose civil administrative penalties. They form a view whether they think that you've engaged in misconduct that is fraudulent, in which case they can impose a penalty of the value of the good. Grossly negligent, which gives them the ability to impose the lesser of the value of the good or four times the duty evaded. Or just negligent, which works essentially the same way, but is the lesser of the value of the good or two times the duties avoided. So when you're looking at 50%, 100%, 150% tariffs, you're going to max out that value of the good cap and this lesser of formulation pretty quickly. In addition to the civil administrative penalties that Customs and Border Protection could impose, there's also the criminal smuggling statute, I guess anti-smuggling statute, we should say, which allows for the imposition of criminal fines and imprisonment for individuals convicted of violating it. Then we come back to the False Claims Act that we mentioned a few times. It's enforced by the U.S. Department of Justice's civil division as opposed to the criminal division. There's a minimum statutory penalty per false claim plus treble damages.
So just like in the export control world, this is a pathway for the government where they could start levying 9 or 10 figure penalties or recoveries, which would be in the several hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars.
Right. If you look at the significant value of any of these trade flows, you can get up to big values very quickly. Since the inception of enhancements to the False Claims Act in 1986, the DOJ has collected $78 billion in penalties. The last 2 years have been a record two-year period with 566 recoveries in the government year ending September 2023, and this year with 558 settlements and judgments happening in the fiscal year ending September 30th, 2024. Settlement judgments for that most recent year exceeded $2.9 billion. Now, some of that's healthcare fraud, a decent part of it is, but as we mentioned earlier, the DOJ is signaling already, as of just a few months ago, that customs duties evasion is going to be a high priority for them from an enforcement perspective under this law.
I think this is also some good points to keep in mind if you're in the legal and compliance department in companies and you're looking at communicating this message and prioritizing risks to upper management and the board, is to lay out that these potential penalties can get quite high very quickly. And it's also a stated top priority of the U.S. government. So I think A plus B equals a gray rhino.
Yeah, and this is all starting to bleed together with other areas of economic security law, right, Brent? Richard Vanderford at the Wall Street Journal wrote a piece for the Dow Jones Risk Journal, in which we were quoted, about how tariffs can be used for punitive reasons, and that just compounds all these issues.
Mike, I also wanted to talk a little bit about knowledge. We've talked about the full definition of knowledge under the Export Administration Regulations and how that's evolving. How about in the False Claims Act? What do we see here?
Well, it's very interesting, Brent. There's a fair number of parallels in how the law is written and then what that means for trade compliance programs and how to anticipate where your enforcement risk might be. We don't see a specific express reference to the high probability standard, but in the context of False Claims Act enforcement, knowing or knowingly has a special definition. There are three alternatives. The first is with respect to relevant information, actual knowledge of the information. Second, a person acts in deliberate ignorance of the truth or falsity of the information. That doesn't say the words high probability, but think about what that means. It means that faced with information showing risks, you are deliberately ignoring the truth or falsity of that information. In practice, that means you're not doing risk-based due diligence. The third definition is where a person acts in reckless disregard of the truth or falsity of the information. I think for most of the people listening, and assuming they're working at multinational companies with some form of trade compliance departments, that's not going to apply. That's shipping something without a compliance officer, for example, or not taking any effort to look at it at all. Importantly, the definition of knowledge under the False Claims Act concludes in requiring no proof of specific intent to defraud.
So why don't we talk about some practical strategies that companies can take in this new and evolving environment? The U.S.-China relations are heading in one direction, and that's not a positive one. While there may be periodic reprieves, these trends are going to continue for the foreseeable future. Companies are going to have to plan accordingly. Continue diversification beyond China. Part of that diversification process is to update a profile of a risky supplier and supplement vendor due diligence processes accordingly to look for those potential red flags. These could be some things where you're looking for any sort of restricted party affiliations. There may be Chinese military connections, subsidiaries or affiliates with PRC companies outside of China, and new subsidiaries that get set up in the region that claim overnight that they can be supplying this new product. It's going to have to be like the Missouri State model, show me. You have to be able to verify a document and show that to the U.S. government under this new era of policy and enforcement.
It's important to recognize also that national security-driven laws are not meant just to make some disfavored activities more costly than others. They are meant to stop certain behaviors. Anything that sounds too good to be true likely is, unfortunately. These tariffs threaten to put many companies out of business, or at least require them to completely rethink how they come to market, how they build their products, how they manufacture. Make sure that any changes you make to how you're valuing goods, how you're describing your inputs, your supply chains, how you're coming to market, are well documented, are well supported, and anticipate the need to defend changes in valuation, changes in practices to Customs and Border Protection. It's very likely that they will sit on your product and ask you to explain. You don't want to start the process of preparing the explanation at that point. So if you're going to take some positions to try to reduce your tariffs, plan in advance for having to defend those robustly because they will be challenged. One example in particular, Brent, is the concept of transfer pricing. This is usually a tax issue. It's the pricing that companies within a corporation use for intra-company transfers. There are tax aspects to this. Do not assume that transfer pricing that's acceptable for tax purposes is automatically acceptable for customs purposes. Don't launch into what sounds like a good solution unprotected by the analysis and advice about whether what you're doing is going to be acceptable to Customs and Border Protection and how you can defend it when you need to. You should assume that you will need to. Well, Brent, that brings us back by increasingly popular demand to managing up. What's your segment for managing up this week?
Be not afraid. This comes from a guest essay by retired U.S. Army General McChrystal in the New York Times on April 13th. In which he says, the strength of our character is not defined by the absence of fear, but by our ability to face it, to rise above it, and to live and lead with integrity. Look, changes are coming fast and furious these days. Amid the chaos and uncertainty, take a step back and look at the bigger trends through data points that may be pointing in all directions. Recognize that the world is changing and we're not going to go back to what it was before. We're in a period of fundamental change. And those companies and their people who understand this are going to leave their competitors behind by facing our fears. We can achieve clarity from chaos. The signals will then stand out from the noise. Be not afraid.
Well said, Brent. Well, Brent, that concludes the latest episode of Red Flags Rising. I'm sure this will not be the last time we speak about tariffs and the importance of compliance programs to protect companies and the bottom line in the face of such tariffs. Brent, be well.
Thanks, Mike. Be well.